Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsack.
And we are here for Clone Wars Report.
Da, 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 da.
Time to discuss Jedi Knight Anakin Skywalker.
War. Anakin's in the middle of it.
Your news music was extra bouncy.
It was a little different. I was trying to change it up.
It's good.
I don't know. It's a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Yeah, I think. That was circus music now. I want to see a bear do some juggling when you do that.
Thinking about circus episode when Ahsoka and the younglings.
So great.
Padawan's
going. So great. Yeah. I'm rewatching that episode with my wife very soon.
Nice.
I haven't run that by her, but I'm sure once I say, hey, good morning, guards, in a circus, she will be very excited.
Big win.
Yeah, we never finished our, my wife and I finished our Clone Wars rewatch.
Yep.
And every once in a while, she's just like, stops what she's doing. She's like, why haven't we finished Clone Wars? I'm sorry. We're going to get to it.
Much to do.
There's so much to watch, so much to enjoy. We are very excited to be here enjoying the Clone Wars on Clone Wars Report in these episodes building up to the release of the new season. We wanted to take some time to talk about all the different things we liked in Clone Wars, and we just found ourselves in the groove of talking about some of the main characters. Mm-hmm. We talked about Ahsoka. We talked about Kenobi. This episode, we're going to talk about Anakin. Next week, we're going to talk about Padme, and then the glorious event will begin, and we'll be talking about the new episodes of the Clone Wars. So, Ken, do you feel ready to dive into the knighthood of Anakin Skywalker?
I am ready.
Excellent. So I want to start with the glaring, the obvious, the horn trumpet of the Clone Wars discussion. Do you like Anakin better in the Clone Wars, or do you just feel in general that spending that time with him, hearing Matt Lanter's take on him, enhances the Anakin that exists in the actual prequel movies?
I think I've ended up on that, where now I see them almost as the same. Definitely appreciate what Matt Lanter did. I've appreciated Hayden more as time's gone on. That's where I'm at now. Where I started, 100% like, oh, why couldn't I have seen this in the movies? And which I think is a pretty common shared gut reaction to the series. But what I think when you put it together, I think Lanter was doing a great job of building on what was there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. For me, I it's not a question of better, because I think it's very different, because we get to spend such quality time with him, and we get to spend time with him where he is, again, like we talked about with Kenobi last week, reacting to big events in his life, certainly, but not the biggest of events that we get to see in the movies. And I think he particularly, the version that we see in the Clone Wars animated series really matches up to the Anakin we see at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith.
Yes.
The I'm not leaving Obi-Wan behind, the that compassion, not the rageful fear of loss, but just the compassion for wanting to go back for the clones who are being taken out in the space battle, and Obi-Wan having to say they're doing their job so we can do ours, and getting to see that, the kind part of attachment, the healthy and heroic part of attachment.
I think it really, glad you mentioned that Obi-Wan and Sith moment, because I think that's overlooked. If just if you're talking about that movie, he does start there. He does there. He's on board,
and they have this fun banter, and they're in unison. And I think that builds a lot on what is in Clone Wars, even though obviously it was made first. What do you like about the Anakin that we get to spend time with in the Clone Wars animated series? What are your favorite things?
I enjoy him being really sleeves rolled up in the fighting, not in the sense of always just a warrior. He's definitely got some, that militaristic side. I was rewatching the Citadel escape arc, which I was telling you off air. I totally forgot the death of Evan Peel. Evan Peel happens in that episode.
Yes, the Clone Wars goes on the mission to kill the Jedi who need to be dead by Revenge of the Sith.
I don't know why. I mean, it wasn't like decades ago I watched the episodes. I watched it relatively. I was relived the trauma. It's like, no, you can't die. But in that episode, there's a lot of things where they hint at things to come between him and Tarkin and everything. But I was just looking at, he is a warrior. He is there. He is there for the good fight, for what he believes a good fight. And there's some complicated reasons beyond that. I think in the Clone Wars, I enjoy that the most. Specific moments, can come to my mind a little bit later. But just the relationship with Rex, the relationship with the clones, and he's one of the guys, one of the gals, one of them. He's there in it and doing good in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the complications come later. So that's the kind of stuff, him in action.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does. It does. The word that has always jumped to my mind when I think about Anakin, and I think why people really compliment Matt Lanter, is because it is in the writing, but it is just in his tone. It's just in his aura. The word that always comes to mind is brotherly. He just feels like that guy who is there for you. Mm. And I might have some bias from having a brother who's 3 years older than me. And it might be kind of, for myself, attaching a little bit of that relationship of that person who, like, they might have their stuff going on.
Yeah.
But they're a little bit more outward thinking and are there for everybody else.
Gotcha.
We definitely get to see his baggage.
Right.
But he's just so there for... He's there for Ahsoka, and he's there in a way that doesn't feel like I'm your dad.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we get to see the different Jedi Padawan relationships, and they slide between more sibling versus more parental.
Yeah.
And especially since they create a bond so quickly about Ahsoka's like, oh, you do risky, dangerous things. Cool. I'll do that too. From the get-go, the movie when she drops the house on him. Drops the wall on him and like, trust me.
Yeah.
This will be a silent movie bit, and it'll fall in the right place and you won't die. It's so like his little sister.
Yeah.
Who he could find annoying, but he actually does see all the great things about her and wants to protect her and wants her to be safe and wants her to grow and learn and doesn't want her to deal with the kind of problems he has to deal with, and getting to see. Yeah, he still listens to Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan still lectures him. Mm. But they're, you know, closer in rank and they are brothers. They're partners, not just master and apprentice.
You're onto something there with the brother thing. And then, and just hearing you describe it, thinking they gave Darth Vader a little sister.
Yeah.
You know, just think of it, you know, and that and what that does. But yeah, the because Obi-Wan and the other Jedi are always, there's a little insulation there. There's a distance. There's a bit of a wall. They're experienced. They've been through a lot. And I think we forget, you know, coming out of the events of Attack of the Clones, Anakin just got secretly married. He's still learning. He's on the outside of some things. So therefore, he doesn't have a full sense of authority, even though it might be on the same level. But still, you know, so to watch him kind of work through that and be there alongside Ahsoka as well as teaching her is a fun relationship. They could have done that differently.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they went that way.
Yeah. And I think just knowing that, given the events of Attack of the Clones, he has opened himself up to rage and he knows what that feels like, you know, when he has that meltdown and admits to Padme that he killed them all. And we learn, you know, later in Revenge of the Sith that he also told Palpatine. But there's a nice simmer there when there's so many great moments in the Clone Wars animated series where he's like, I'll give in to a little bit of anger, but I'll justify it. It's what's needed to get the job done. And it's unfair for the Jedi to leave this person behind, so I'm going to go back for them. And it's simmering. It's a great kind of simmer because you know that he has gone too far.
Yeah.
But in the Clone Wars, there's so many moments where just I feel like morally the audience is with him.
Mm-hmm.
When he's like, no, R2 is not just valuable because he has information. It's because he's R2. He's worthy of value and appreciation as a separate being. And the Jedi are like, it's a droid. What's your deal?
What's your deal,
you
man?
Know, and it's a great counterpoint to, I feel like the movie spent a little bit more time on the darkness of Anakin rather than letting us see the good man that Obi-Wan remembers in those moments where even though it's things that might lead him to darkness, he still feels like a good man.
That's a great point. Also going to just Alec Guinness's words of, you know, he was a good friend. Like to actually see that promise come through here is great. And really setting this tone for, like you just said, saying the R2 example or any general examples of that's good attachment, you'd think. And to have that be at odds with the Jedi as his attachment needs of attachment are growing. That's the seeds are planted right there, but from a very positive standpoint.
Yeah.
Not just that sometimes I think Hayden's performance gets written off as whiny, which I would say that's a Skywalker trait at times, not for Leia, but for others.
It certainly it runs in the male the part male of the Skywalkers, right? From Tashi Station to Traitor, whininess is in the Skywalkers.
I bet you have. so I think it's a deeper look at what ended up happening.
Yeah. So I want to examine some of those light side, dark side moments, because that's the balance of storytelling with Anakin in this era, where you need to see the memory of this good friend that Obi-Wan has. And you also need to see he's slipping because he's getting to that place where he feels out of control in Revenge of the Sith. So do you have specific favorite light side moments where you feel like he was being a good person. He was being a good Jedi. He was on the side of the light.
I am drawn to two probably wildly different ideas, both vague in my mind because my Clone Wars rewatch has been very jumpy. This episode, that episode. I love the Saw and Stila Guerrera stuff, and him and Ahsoka kind of at the forefront training them is training them in this guerrilla warfare that, you know, by the way, Saw ends up almost kind of using against him later on. There's the setup.
And becoming so very similar to him with just all that imagery of Saw's life-saving equipment being very similar to Vader's.
100%. There you go. Wow, it's like Star Wars' themes built into it. So, never mind. There's something I just like about Latin. There's other kind of similar episodes where Anakin's got to help and train, or the villagers who only want peace. And Ahsoka drove a lot of that one, if I remember correctly.
But I want to drill down on the Saw and Stila for a moment.
Yeah.
So just in terms of your own take for the Jedi, you know, the Jedi wrestle constantly with, when is it the morally the best thing to be inactive and just let other people determine their own fate?
Yeah.
Let the galaxy and the force flow as it is versus when should you step up?
Right.
And I think a lot of what Anakin wrestles with in the Clone Wars is he often feels more like we should do things. It is our responsibility to take action.
Yeah.
If I'm remembering correctly, he's the one who's really pushing for getting super involved in Saw and Steela's conflict. So how did that land for you morally? Did you feel like when you watch those episodes, you're on Anakin's side?
I am on Anakin's side, and I like the idea of this, you know, going to the Qui-Gon, I can't fight a war for you type of thing. So, hey, I'm going to train some people up there. And then, again, it's fresher in my mind, but the Citadel arc, him and Tarkin finding this weird common ground, and we know where it ends up, so it's tantalizing. But there's this one point, I love those kind of, well, it's very true from a certain point of view moments in Star Wars. And it's where Anakin's just kind of like, we stop ourselves.
Why are we half-assing this war?
We're already in a war.
Yeah.
We could end it. Like, he's got this feeling of we could end it. And the fact that I think he's putting that into Saw, and in a bigger discussion and even in real life on what you need to do to stop things, blah, 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 but just how it plays out in Star Wars time, there's Saw's not wrong until he blows up children at a school, you know, like,
yeah,
whoa. And so therefore, where does it stop? And it leads you down that. But going back to that, I think it really comes from a good place in Anakin's mind, which is you can see how it's very easy to pervert it down the line.
Yeah.
Very easy for, you know, I was talking, I was a guest on this podcast with this guy named Hambone Dave. He really loves the prequels. But a good.
Are you sure this isn't an episode of the Clone Wars?
It might be Hambone Dave.
That's one of the clones, right?
Yeah, he might have, along with the Kobe Bryant battle droid that I forgot was in the show until I watched the Citadel arc. We were discussing just one of my favorite moments is Newt Gunray saying to Anakin in Revenge of the Sith, but Sidious promised us peace.
Yeah.
Which to me is one of those moments that in that moment, just all the bad things he's done, and the Trade Federation, as you always say, it's Amazon getting an army going.
Yeah.
It's like, I believe that. I believe that moment. I believe that came from somewhat of a good spot. We could have a longer discussion on Newt Gunray's perversion of his own desires. But I think I go back to, I was watching the Citadel stuff, and it's like, I think Anakin just feels like, we don't want this war. I like fighting, but I don't want this. Why don't we end it? We got powers.
Yeah.
We're wizards.
See, and this is I think, the one of the things that's so fascinating about Anakin in the Clone Wars is that he is this vessel to us discussing our own levels of interpretation. Mm-hmm. So when he's advocating for Saw and Steela, and saying like, hey, yeah, I know we're here to train them, they're going to die, so why don't we step up?
Right.
For me, that's a little bit like, hey, you're listening to Shmi saying the problem in this universe is nobody helps each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's coming from this more noble place. When you get to Tarkin and he's like,
oh, yeah.
Well, I don't feel like we're going far enough. It feels to me like what he's saying, it's probably because he's talking to Tarkin, is like, they could send me to kill.
Mm-hmm.
I could kill these people and I could end. And one is, to me, like, is a little bit more defense. These people need our help, and we are right here, so why don't we help?
Mm-hmm.
Versus, if only the Jedi Council would just proactively send me to wipe out our enemies, this would be over. And there's those fine areas of not just what your actions are, but what are your intentions.
What are your intentions? And how easily it can get kind of convoluted in your own brain. I'm trying to think of some real-world examples, but this particular thing started out from a good point, but then if other people around you can suddenly, like a Tarkin, the Tarkin initiative's already forming in his brain. Yep. He's not a great dude, but comes from also just a real in his own nobility, which is, again, that's another discussion. But so I love that moment. Again, it's so fresh in my brain. That's definitely why I'm talking about it. There's a lot of things in Clone Wars I'm forgetting right now, but except for the Meeber Gascon arc. But, you know, you're really hitting on why I like those two competing moments. Because he's not wrong with Steele and Saw and Steela. He comes a good spot. I love that you brought in the mother thing, Shmi. I mean, we've talked about how Shmi, the influence of Shmi.
Yeah.
She essentially, I think, put the ticking time bomb that saves him years later.
Yeah.
You know, he almost returns to that table with Qui-Gon and Jar Jar at the end of Return of the Jedi in my mind. So, yeah, interesting stuff there.
Yeah.
I could go on about Tarkin being wrong, but thinking he's right.
Yeah.
And being able to just get in Anakin's ears. You can see it. It's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Even though it ends up really bad for the galaxy.
Not great for the galaxy,
not
but
great
yeah.
For the galaxy.
It's a great, like, ooh, that's how this, this is our Facebook memory of the beginning of their relationship.
Right.
Right? Yeah. For me, sort of favorite light side moments. I think there's a lot that I like where, just like we talked about with Obi-Wan, there are episodes where we get flavor of Anakin, but he doesn't make any big decision. It's not a spotlight on who will he become. He's just doing his job.
Yeah.
Right. And maybe he does it with a little bit of edge, or maybe he does it with a little bit of extra heart, but he's just there being a Jedi, doing what he is told to do. So many episodes he finds his own way to do it, which is a little bit more rash or cocky, but that's not necessarily presented as a bad thing.
Yeah.
I think for me, when I thought of light side moments, there are moments where I think his attachment comes across not as a weakness, but as a strength, like just having empathy. There's that. I haven't rewatched it in a little while, so don't remember all the exact details. But there's an early episode in the Ryloth campaign where Ahsoka makes some rash decisions and gets a lot of her clones killed.
Yeah.
And Anakin is just really there for her emotionally. Right. Instead of being an Obi-Wan and going and kind of leaning on her, he's like, been there, done that with the rash decision. So just seeing him as a master with empathy, again, that's the sort of like brotherly, like, I've already made that mistake. I understand why you made it. The need to rescue R2, the connection to R2, for me, that's that those episodes are played with those notes of like, ooh, here's the attachment thing.
Yeah.
But I think in the overall morality of Star Wars, the story has often been droids are undervalued.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't be, you know, go back to, you know, Anakin's daughter saying never underestimate a droid. Right.
Yep.
And that he sees value in everybody is a real light side thing to me. And like R2 is valuable because of not just because he's a computer to hold our secrets.
Yeah.
Because he's sentient.
Yeah.
He matters. That's a great thing. Light side, it's a little bit, I guess it's the light side of Anakin and Padme's relationship. Mm. I love in general that episode, Evil Plans, where Padme is hosting a sort of a diplomatic dinner. The majority of the episode is the droids being hunted by Cad Bane and 3PO and R2 going through some stuff.
Yeah.
But you get to see some just utter domesticity.
Yes.
It's not Anakin sneaking over for, you know, a tryst. It's not Anakin and Padme, you know, stealing a kiss behind a column in the middle of a political thing. It's just like she's got a stressful thing she has to do at work.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like watching that episode, it's sort of like, oh, talking to my wife, like, do you have a stressful business meeting? Let me talk through your needs.
Yeah.
But and help you for it. And just that Anakin's there just kind of, it's one of those rare moments where you're just like, that's a husband.
Yeah.
That's what husbands actually do.
Side note, you can't go back, and who knows with season 7, you know, I just don't think we'll have that time. It's too close for Revenge of Sith, blah, blah, blah. I would love a little bit more of that in Star Wars, of them, specifically Anakin and Padme.
Yeah.
Especially because how bad the relationship goes and everything. Just to actually see it, I haven't really thought about in those terms that it's just like, it's a sitcom. Or an HBO hour drama, all rolled into one. And it's really, I like that a lot.
Yeah, that episode does have some sitcom vibes. Yeah. Well, let's go to the other side. Let's talk about some dark side moments of Anakin in the Clone Wars, because there are definitely some that underline, hey, I know you're watching the fun cartoon show, but remember where this is going, kids.
Yeah.
Kind of moments. For you, any moments that jump out of dark side Anakin emerging?
The one that I think I've heard a lot discussed, I know it's a favorite of some of my friends who love the series. Correct me, I think it's with Rush Clovis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. When he just straight out beats him up.
Beats the crap out of his wife's ex. Yeah. Yeah.
No force, no wizardry, raw, unchecked, whatever term you want to use, aggression. Jealousy, rage, and I still, that when you talk about what jumps out to me of 6 seasons, that's what I go to.
Yeah. Is it because of what you're describing where it feels more primal, it feels more real world because it's not force choking, it's I'm going to punch your face and throw you across the room.
It is that it's him. It's everything stripped away. Lightsaber, force powers, the cloak, the cape, what he feels, his title. It's him.
Yeah.
And the fact that that's there, you know, the idea of just, you know, that shadow could be in any one of us.
Yeah.
How you choose to deal with jealousy and anger and everything. It comes out, and it's very Star. And it reminds you of the Tatooine, the Tusken Raider moment. It reminds you of a lot of things you know in Star Wars.
Yeah.
But to see it in the real world, it stands out for a reason.
Yeah, yeah. I think it, yeah, and it's, you know, toward the end, so I think it is very much an attempt to be. So that when Rush Clovis is introduced, there's jealousy. Mm-hmm. But then that jealousy turns into rampant violence. And it is a great build toward the, yes, he loves Padme, but his actions are not about his love. They're about that fear of losing, right?
Yep,
and that's what jealousy is about, right? That sharp pain that somebody is going to take something from you. It is really powerful. And it isn't those kind of, like we were discussing earlier, like, helping San Stilo when he was told not to. Let's examine the morality. Like, yes. Yep. Oh, unnecessarily beating the holy hell out of.
Perhaps some Jedi therapy isn't needed.
Exactly. So, that's a big one. We mentioned this last week talking about Obi-Wan. I think the great insight of his fury at losing Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
When Obi-Wan goes undercover in order to do that, they fake his death and kind of cruelly don't let Anakin into the loop. I guess that's, up for debate whether it's cruel. It's a Jedi way, but certainly it sure didn't help Anakin's good feelings toward the Jedi. But I love that we get to see him in rage and again playing with that, like, what is the power of the light of attachment? When is it a strength and a gift versus when is it an excuse to lash out in anger? And he seems to kind of have this like, I mean, he's my master, my father, my brother. Yeah, of course I'm going to lash out.
Excuse is a good word to use there. Yeah. About what he can justify in his mind.
Yeah. I don't remember, again, because there's so much Clone Wars, even watching the episodes three times, there's details that escape me, but I like elements of the Zygerian slave story, in particular, that we learn, this is necessarily a dark side moment, but a great insight to Anakin, where we learn that Ahsoka doesn't know that Anakin had been a slave.
Right.
And that he doesn't talk about his background. So that's such a great insight because, again, from a more real world perspective, a great way to deal with your feelings is talking about them.
Yeah.
If he is disconnecting from the kindness and the wisdom that Shmi passed on to him, just bearing it, not thinking about it. And the only thought of his mother is one of grief and rage.
Mm-hmm.
And because he isn't examining it, he isn't sharing it, he isn't passing on what it was like to have that loving mother. That's not a part of his, what he passes on to Ahsoka. He just doesn't talk about it.
And I don't know off the top of my head. I don't know if there's some specific examples of where this has been discussed, even in the new novels. Comics sometimes go more into his past, Charles Soule series and everything.
Yeah.
But the idea of if he's not dealing with it, he's obviously going around for years thinking, I couldn't save my mother because I didn't do anything sooner. I didn't.
Yeah.
We as Jedi didn't go back to Tatooine and free all the slaves like my dreams. And this is where you and I think love putting down all canon that we know on a table and going, here's the whole thing. So you go to the Phantom Menace novel where he's dreaming about coming back with an army or whatever it was to liberate. And now that we know Padme, after, the events of Phantom Menace, sending Sabe and ever let's try to free, because she looks over at the temple and kind of is like, there's a little kid over there that his mom's back on there and that's in my face.
And it's not right.
It's not right. And so did they have any point have those discussions? And so I joke about a Jedi therapy situation, but like I they need some on-call Jedi mental health help over there, an expert over there, because a lot of them probably go through some stuff. And so the idea of him burying that and it manifests into, because I didn't do this, I didn't go back and slaughter those Tusken Raiders early.
Yeah,
it's got to carry some weight and got to be there. It's going outside the bounds of our discussion about the Clone Wars, but.
No, I mean, I think that's part of it, is because the Clone Wars is, it's, you can watch an episode and sometimes it's honestly 60% action, fun, And then, you know, 40% or 30% will be these moments that really crystallize and broaden out the larger canon. I think that's what's great about it. Let's talk a little bit about one of his most important relationships in the Clone Wars, which is having a Padawan.
Yeah.
So how do you think it changed Anakin to have a Padawan?
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I love this question because, again, I'm laying all the canon down on the roadmap there.
Got a big old canon table.
When you see it, when it first happens, no matter what you thought of Snips and what was going on, you know, I think you can think you're going to get kind of where it goes. And then I just, still to this day, is why Ahsoka's just such a powerful character to me, where it goes. And you talked about the brother relationship. So at the end, I'm just going to jump into where she walks away. And that final conversation we have, and the thing you touched upon that I keep going back, put it on a t-shirt, just Ahsoka's the one to highlight. The Jedi weren't wrong. We just got away from what we believed.
They just didn't. They just fell down on their own beliefs. They taught me. Yeah.
Yeah. And you got, you know, institutions, everything. And I think they have that moment. She's putting that train of thought because he's kind of got some of these stuff going on, right or wrong. He probably could have walked away in that moment. And so therefore it flips it. It's like Rey teaching Luke a little bit.
Yeah.
And him come and grab the Force, Luke grabbing that lightsaber is him going, I learned from you. And I think so there's a lot that he ends up learning from her. And in the end, might have changed him. Again, connecting back to Shmi, connecting back to Ahsoka. That's part of the reason I think he might have changed and saved Luke in that moment, other than just the base level connection. So that's where I think it was a change that was inside him, and it took a while to go out. Which is why in Rebels, I think she's the one that could have saved him at that point. And I still interpret that moment. You kind of hear Matt Lanter's voice in the Rebels showdown between them. It's because Anakin reappears for a second, and it's Ahsoka that does it. And so for him to just suddenly, I'm your Jedi Master, and they need to teach me responsibility, and this is why my masters gave me you as a student. Clearly, the relationship changes by then. It's more on even ground, and I think it's an exciting emotional landscape to play around with.
Yeah.
Play around with.
Yeah, yeah. I like the idea that, okay, the Jedi are paying some attention to this important, powerful, chosen one, allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jedi are very concerned about attachment and being able to let go. And it seems like that is a part of the point of the master and apprentice relationship, because making those attachments between one another is natural, but you need to handle them in the Jedi way. You need to say, well, the mission that I'm on is more important than my master. So if my master needs to sacrifice himself, that's the way of the mission. You know, and there are episodes that deal with that really specifically, where both Ahsoka and Anakin are, you know, from the rest other Jedi's perspective, too attached and need to learn. There's a lot of great episodes like that. So I like just that starting point of like, this is why we're giving you a Padawan to see if you can handle that kind of attachment and to see if you can let go in a way that the Jedi view is helpful, which then becomes fascinating that he kind of doesn't get the chance to make the choice for himself. She walks away from him. So there's that arc from if the point from the Jedi's perspective, from Wise Master Yoda's perspective, is to teach Anakin how and when to let go in a healthy way, that he even gets robbed of that.
Yeah.
From his perspective, that Ahsoka makes this big moral stand that he hasn't made the choice to do, maybe out of conviction, maybe out of fear. And she just adds from his perspective to the pile of loss. This is a different kind of loss, right? Because he lost his mother in all the ways that we're talking about. But to have Ahsoka say, sorry.
Yeah.
I know you tried, but I just don't want to be a part of this anymore. In just the literal image of her walking away.
So it's so powerful. She becomes herself. I Padme to me is and I think on by way of design of the story, the final piece, the final
the thing
puzzle
he has promised himself never to lose,
which manifests into Palpatine being the thing he needs to keep alive in a way, in a more literal sense. I just again get this idea of that of Ahsoka walking away. You know, here comes another example of Ken references something else. What is it going to be? Wrestling, Game of Thrones, or baseball? Game of Thrones. When I've been focusing a lot about the death of Ser Jorah and how that affected Dany. And how that could have been one of those final pieces that may have she respected him so much she may have changed some of her path. I don't know. This is just this old different discussion. But Ahsoka around in any way, shape, or form might have been the one thing that would have talked some sense into him on a level of, I think at some point, because they're even in some ways, at some point you're not going to listen to Obi-Wan. At some point you're not going to listen to Mace, especially when Mace is like, "Stay here, kid."
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes, I feel like the arc of Anakin and his relationship with other Jedi, like, trying. Yeah. You didn't like me the second you met me, and I'm trying to follow the Jedi ways because I want to be a noble Jedi. I admire Obi-Wan when I'm not mad at him. Yeah. So Ahsoka's a great
hope
for him to have a better relationship with the Jedi.
Yeah.
The other thing I really like about their dynamic is, I think that she allowed him to see himself more.
Totally.
And to see himself initially in maybe a better light. Mm. Right? Because there's a lot of just kind of straightforward, normal morality tale growing up. Anakin sees Ahsoka acting in a rash and dangerous way and gets to have those like, oh, that's what it felt like when I did that to Obi-Wan. It's a total just chain of life kind of thing. Those moments that are great.
Yeah.
But seeing the healthy part, I think, of her compassion and her willingness to risk herself for people she loves and being inventive and clever. And like, I think it must have been a good thing for him to see those things from the outside.
Yeah.
And probably healthy on some level, but also continue to drive the divide between the Jedi of like, look at all these traits they're mad at me for. Mm-hmm. I see them in Ahsoka and she sees them in me and we both value one another. And like many moments, you know, throughout Clone Wars where another Jedi or another Padawan will, you know, like the rest of the Jedi know that you two do things different ways or no surprise that you did a rash thing being Anakin's Padawan. So like, so they form this little club of like, maybe there's a different way to do things. Yeah. So like, I think there's like positive things in him getting to see himself in her.
Yeah.
In things that drive a divide between him and the rest of the
him
Jedi.
And the Jedi. Oh man. The idea too, the Ahsoka is somewhat of a roadmap. And for anyone who looks at things as like a scorecard or a video game XP points, I'm not necessarily saying Ahsoka was the other chosen one or anything like that. Follow me on here. But just the idea of Anakin looking at what could have been, in a way, she's almost the good Anakin, the Anakin that stayed, or the Anakin that still was on the outside, kind of figuring things out on her own, following her own way, go with her heart. Some of the
compassionate and compassionate, rash, but not with the anger as much.
And is there any connection? I think he's too far gone, maybe at one point. But just, you know, that moment of looking at her, here she is, she's come back, she's Ahsoka Gandalf the White, she's back doing all those things, and she's still helping, fighting the rebellion, all these kind of things. It's like, if you had just worked through some stuff, Anakin, and because she's so secure to walk away, that's why it's such a powerful moment. We always say it's about Ahsoka kind of becoming herself, but it's also this, you know, she's not, you know, like he says, this is all you wanted. This is all you wanted, Ahsoka. And to have that strength to be like, it was, but look, it's no longer what I want. I can do this without it. If any had stuck again, it's two sides of a coin in a way.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
I don't want to directly run to one-to-one for stat keepers or like, and it could, da-da-da-da. But it could, for me, it works that way.
Yeah. To see her, he had all of these both legitimate griefs with the Jedi and anger and frustration, and to see her take the mature path of just saying, then I walk away. Mm. You know, how did that make himself feel that I can't do that for some reason?
Yeah.
You know, is it a complicated relationship with Padme and the revelation of their relationship, or is it something deep inside himself where he has this childlike ideal of, I know what I want the Jedi to be. I want them to be warriors who rush in to help anybody in peril. And I can't let go of that vision, even though it's not true. And like, her departure must make him question those things on some level. I want to talk a little bit about the Mortis arc. Mm. So what do you think the lesson of the Mortis arc was meant to be for Anakin? We could do a whole episode on the Mortis arc. A lot of people just really love it and find a lot of depth in it. What are your general feelings on the Mortis arc?
I'll say this. I probably got some wrong answers about Mortis, man. And I just watched it last week because it's...
Oh, you did? Okay.
No, but I rewatched it a lot because I'm like... I remember the first time I saw it. I liked it from the beginning, but the first time I saw it, I was like, what is going on? And in a good way, right? Like, what? And that's where you really learn... George had some ideas about the Force.
Yeah, I know. He's like, what? There's a Legend of Zelda temple in a not planet space? Yeah. Like.
But it does not mean I understand it anymore anytime I watch it. You know, he does get a vision of what he is, but it's erased from his mind, and I know that comes up a lot. So I was watching. I was really focused on the sacrifice of the father and wondering, you know, again, it's weird because Anakin, in some sense, is going to have little to no memory of the events here. I don't know to which degree he had the Men in Black neuralizer on him.
I think he remembers the events. He just doesn't remember specifically the vision that the son unlocked.
Because they wake up and they're kind of like, the clones are like, you faded away for a second. Well, for you, it was only a second. For us, it was years.
Yeah.
They have that kind of moment. So, yeah, I imagine men. I remember some of it, but just I think, to me, I went on, you know, perhaps maybe it's on the surface, but just the idea of like, he's literally seeing previews of what's to come, choices, the the some sort of it's not a necessarily forgiveness of the son by the father, but if you're going to not change, I know I'm going to have to. My power is your power, that type of thing.
Yeah, so I'm really to sacrifice myself so you can't, you know, so you can be vulnerable to attack by Anakin. Yeah,
or
defense, depending on your point of view.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's definitely the just straightforward power of in Mortis land. He is specifically a chosen one because his power is just as strong in the light as it is in the dark. And that seems like fairly straightforward of like Anakin, you can choose either path and you are very powerful in either one, where it feels like Obi-Wan is powerful in the light and he couldn't rise to that level of being able to control both the son and the daughter because it is not in his nature.
Right.
I think there are a couple things that struck me on the last time I watched it that are to me interesting overall, especially knowing that George Lucas and Filoni were really kind of filling this with some mythos stuff that would relate back to the rest of the canon table that we're talking about this episode. I think there's some big picture stuff and some stuff that maybe it lodged in Anakin's head. I was really struck this last viewing where the son is of darkness. That is his nature.
Yeah.
And it's been fine. But now the father's upset because the son is acting on it.
Yeah.
Which it goes back to a lot of discussions we've had lately in that video that is circulating of Lucas about balance of the force, that there is a natural balance in the Jedi. Their goal is to maintain it.
Yeah.
But when dark side users begin to really manipulate the dark side and use it on others, that's when things get out of balance.
Yeah.
Because that spreads more and more darkness, the pain and the anger. So the fact that that is what is actually going on in Mortis is the problem isn't that the sun exists.
Yeah.
The problem is that the sun is beginning to act. And that's what is throwing everything out of balance. Could have been a thing that Anakin,
paid attention to.
And then I think just in terms of he's looking around, if you imagine Anakin thinking through this stuff, which maybe he did or didn't, the things that happen, as you're talking about, are sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
The daughter, being of light, sacrifices herself.
Right.
She gives her life force to Ahsoka. The father sacrifices himself so the son can be stopped. So he's seeing these examples of sacrifice. But also, ultimately, what happens in order to set things right is he says, I'll join with the son in explore the dark side, but to stop him.
Right.
Which, because of the father's sacrifice, he does. He ends up stabbing, stopping the son, stopping the darkness. But I wonder if there's any of that, like, look, I'm equally powerful in the light and the dark. I can dabble in the dark side and then... Which to me lines up really well with Revenge of the Sith, where he's like, on some level, he's just like, obviously Palpatine's evil. I'll kill him. I'll take over the government. I'll make Padme queen, whatever. We'll rule together. It's going to be my empire. It'll be fine. I'll just do all these awful things. Then Padme and I can just have a happy life. Like, and that is the lie of the dark side.
Yeah.
It's interesting that what did he get out of his experience in Mortis? Did he get that belief that I can dabble in the dark side just enough to kill my enemies and then everything will be fine?
It's almost as if he was walking around thinking there was gray Jedi and it turns out there wasn't. Don't worry, I'm a gray Jedi. Necessary rage.
Any other thoughts on Mortis?
It's funny, but it's specifically talking about the sun, and this is with Anakin. It was funny because in this last watch around, talking about how, he acts on his power. I was like, how long has he just been sitting there? The son, daughter, and the father. But just how long have they been going on? How long have they been on this planet? Were they born here, raised here? Did they come somewhere else? And the idea that the son's just flicking rocks at bugs or doing something and just is like, enough, I'm going evil. So I had that thought.
I'm going to give in to my nature.
And Anakin's here to bring it out of him.
Lash out. Yeah, a lot of interesting things going on there. And as always, I know Mortis is one of those arcs that means really a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And the caveat we like to throw out, we're sharing our perspective, our takes. We know a lot of people have different perspectives and takes on those. And everyone's take is valid, of course. So as we begin to wrap up our conversation, what do you want to see in season 7 to bring Anakin even closer to where he is during Revenge of the Sith?
I mean, especially since we might be passing by. I from my standpoint now, I think a lot of the big things are at play. I want to see that he and Ahsoka have some kind of, you know, they're going to have a talk, right? We've seen the reveal, at least in the trailers.
Yeah.
And does that talk sour him more on himself in the Jedi, or does he now find it impossible to follow her path, or is he inspired by her but feels he can't get to that point? Like, you're doing great things. Gosh, I can't quit my job.
You know, like, yeah, like, I wonder.
Freelance is working great for you.
Man,
I got medical over here.
Right. Could it go as far as, like, maybe you're right. And when this war is over, I'll really think of whether if the Jedi is the right place for me and set him on that path of, sure, I can do the right thing, but first I need to end the war.
Yeah.
Because he is very much on the, you know, this war needs to end and then everything will be okay.
And then if there's an actual point of him and Obi-Wan racing off to save Palpatine, and then the fear of losing the desire to save Palpatine starts then and there.
That's a really great point, because that's before there is the knowledge that he needs him to save Padme, but he's another father figure. He's another paternal figure to potentially lose.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, and then him racing a little bit again. I don't know how far Seven's going to jump past Sith or what, you know, we're not 100% sure. Because we also see the hologram shot with Padme, right?
Yeah.
So just driving home more of that, really just doubling down on his not wanting to lose those. I mean, and but also going into that final movie, no matter how much the show passes by, follow me here. The idea of him kind of racing off to save the day with Obi-Wan in this naive, we're going to win attitude.
In unison, yeah.
Which might be just on a simple, we know what happens in that sad, bittersweet, great moment, but he's like, let's go save the day. That might help set up a little more pain in the transition.
Right. The one of the few last shining moments of Anakin Skywalker, Jedi Knight and friend of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yeah. I'm all for some more anger and frustration with the Jedi, because it's not like, I think the story is well told in Revenge of the Sith, where all of those, they are asking him to do things that are a little bit over the line, and Palpatine exploits that so well. But exactly what you're saying, to sum up that relationship with Ahsoka by developing that, I would also like to see a moment in maybe this is a little bit more, this last season is going to be more Ahsoka's story, so maybe we won't see it. I've been thinking a lot about the moments in Star Wars prequels in particular where greed is a problem, because Lucas talks a lot about that, of like, that's the problem with the dark side, is it's never enough.
Yeah.
If you get more power, you want more power. If you control more people, you want to control more people. And going back to, like, it makes a lot of sense. If that's his perspective of the dark side, he starts with a company that doesn't want to pay taxes.
Yeah.
It's a good way to start with greed.
Yeah.
And Anakin says, you know, there's something wrong. I want more.
Mm.
My power isn't enough. So there's that sense that even before, like, I need this power to save Padme, that longing for more power. I would love to see that sense of greed of, I'm a powerful Jedi. I'm, in fact, people believe, one of the most powerful Jedi ever. In just this burning sensation that it's not enough.
The idea, going back to what you said earlier, what him talking to Padme of, like, let's, you know, rule the Empire together, rule the galaxy together. If he has a nicer, simpler, again, kind of naive version of that, of just like, let's, you know, especially if the show goes past certain events that we're familiar with, and be able to recontextualize and reframe some of the moments we are familiar with a little more context, a little more thought behind it.
Yeah,
it's just simple. We take over.
My last super nerdy thing, and I'm not normally is like, but it was said in Revenge of the Sith. Since they make such a big deal in that first conversation between Anakin and Padme when she reveals her pregnancy about how long he's been away in the Outer Rim sieges and the rumors of his death, I would love those to be concrete. I would love to see that, you know, what exactly were the Outer Rim sieges? How long was he gone? How long were they apart? Because that
you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. And if you're Anakin, the fear of loss grow deeper.
Yeah.
And the rumors of your death. To me, that would be just a fun canon thing if you see, like, some clones from a certain perspective, or, you know, does Wolfie Larn think he's dead? You know?
Ah, yeah.
How do those rumors start?
Yeah.
That'd be a fun little canon thing for me. Any other favorite Anakin moments, relationships, or details that we haven't touched on that you really like inside the Clone Wars?
You mentioned Wolf Yularen. They're kind of... Yularen's just... We mentioned him recently. You were talking about him on Star Wars Rank. Just his kind of annoyance with the Jedi. And a great way to kind of just canonize his switch from the Republic to the Empire.
Cool. Slightly different uniforms. Great. Yeah, I'm continuing on my mission.
And I can be more of a, you know... Internal investigations on great. If he's involved in that moment you're talking about, if he's just like, yep, he's dead.
Yeah.
He's so dead. Move on.
Anakin is dead.
So I enjoy that relationship. We haven't touched a ton on Anakin and Palpatine in Clone Wars. There's a lot of moments there, but none that jump out, but just the continuing relationship of those guys. But again, we talk a lot about him and the clones, him and Rex. Him and the clones as they rub shoulders in the battlefield. I really do enjoy that.
Yeah, that real compassion for them, I think, is extremely strong. A couple other little Anakin moments I like. The episode Hostage Crisis, where it's an earlier one where Anakin is, and Padme are kind of talking about the relationship, then is a symbol of how much he is... trusts her and is devoted to her, gives her his lightsaber, and then she ends up in a hostage crisis with the awkward, like, what? Do you have his lightsaber? And he has to try to save her without the lightsaber. It's a great way to play on.
Sitcom moment.
It is. Yeah, it's the Star Wars romance sitcom of, like, uh-oh. This is a tiny detail that both you and I have mentioned in the past, but I love it, seeing Anakin's quarters and that he has a pod racing poster. It's just one of those little human details that I could take so many more of, that he's still kind of like this idea that when he's not in rage or off on a Jedi mission, that he maybe just watches some holos of pod races because he's still like, that's awesome. I like watching racing.
Put a pin in that. Yeah.
And then the final thing I wanted to mention, in what had been the last arc of the Clone Wars, where Yoda is learning more about becoming one with the Force, that Yoda is under scrutiny by the rest of the Jedi because they're not sure about him, if he's physically, mentally okay.
Right.
And Yoda goes to Anakin to help him escape and is like, hey, you're feisty droid.
Yeah.
I would like to borrow him if I may. And also, of all the Jedi I could call to help me break the rules, I call you. Yeah. It's a really interesting dynamic to have one of these sort of roguish, not doing Jedi ways exactly right traits of Anakin to actually be commended by Yoda. It's like, oh man, it's just one of those bittersweet moments of like, oh, what if there'd been a little bit more connection like that, where Anakin felt seen and appreciated by people like Yoda. That would have been beautiful. All right. Any final thoughts from you before we do our final question? No. All right. Well, then we've been ending all of our episodes with this, so we'll do it again. Do it again. If Anakin was real and we could ask him one question, what might it be?
Well, you touch upon it. I would want to pull up at a bar, probably at the Outlander Club. And just as he's watching pod racing, be like, hey, man, you're one of the best. You ever think about getting back into it?
You would goad a Jedi Knight Anakin Skywalker to get back into the pod racing gig.
Just that sports guy that retired after one season. Or you ever think about doing it again? Get that one at bat, that one touchdown.
Yeah.
Think you can do it?
Yeah.
Think you can do it?
Try a different sport? You want to could you be a grav ball star? Yeah. Yeah, that would be amazing. I have a philosophical question and a dumb question. I would ask him if he thinks about the stuff that his mom told him.
Definitely.
Or if he just kind of pushes it out of his mind, or if he doesn't relate the sort of wisdom that she gave him to the current events of his life, or where that sits in his mind, is a fascinating character thing to me. And then the utterly pedantic thing I would ask him, totally inappropriate, but I would sidle up to him at a bar and say, exactly where was your arm cut off? Above or below the elbow? Because I need to know.
We need to know.
And if it's below. How did you grow some back? How did that work?
The healing powers of Bacta.
The healing powers of Bacta. They can grow an elbow and nothing else. Well, that is our look at Anakin Skywalker when he is a wonderful, good Jedi Knight with some issues in the Clone Wars. We can't wait to talk about Padme and to dig into all of the new episodes of Clone Wars coming in Season 7. For myself, for Ken, and for Anakin, we are done.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.